This is Fiona Maynard welcoming you to another Viewpoint podcast. And with me today, I have Rob Miller, who is co-chair of the Building Committee, along with Steve Durbin, whose remit is to move forward the refurbishment project of the building. And I also have Asha Marcus from Johannesburg. Welcome, Asha. And he's running the Hubo Studio, which is the architect who will design the project. So welcome to Rob and to Asha. And the first question, I think, is, Rob, can you tell me why your committee has chosen Asha out of all the architects? What makes his firm stand out from the other firms?
Okay, thanks, Fiona. So we've been working on this probably for just over a year. We, as a committee, met with three different architects initially, who were all great in their own way, and they all had different skill sets, but we just didn't feel enthused, and we didn't feel they had necessarily the imagination and the design for what I think is a really unique project. And then Asha came along, and his enthusiasm for this project is infectious. The vision he's got, and he presented on Zoom to the building committee, and we were blown away by it. It was a unanimous decision to appoint him.
Okay, so therefore, Asha, you've been appointed. So what makes you excited about this particular project? So explain the vision for this building and perhaps even the concept behind the workshop that you did last night.
Okay, thank you so much for having me. I am fascinated by impact and architecture. For me, I love to create the most possibly impactful spaces that I can. That's why community is such an attractive prospect. Communities are complex mechanisms, complex organisms. They adapt and change, and they require vision. And it's great. I always say, you know, we create spaces as visionary as you are and as inspirational as you are. So when I was approached by this building committee, it was clear that they're a crew with a real vision, a real ambition, and that for me meant that, you know, we're going to get the best out of this relationship and create something quite visionary and really pioneering in the space of, you know, Jewish community spaces. The concept behind the workshop was really interesting. It was an attempt to get the individual to put on someone else's hat. So it was to put yourself in somebody else's shoes. Everybody thinks about, oh, I need this space for myself, or how will we function without X, Y, or Z? But when they start to imagine a future in the shoes of somebody else, so a young person imagining, you know, what a pensioner would require from the space, and, you know, a pensioner starting to wonder about, you know, what a young married woman might need, starts to create such an interesting dynamic, because they start to create a sense of empathy. And for me, I think empathy is the kind of foundation of community, because we're all striving to create a space where everybody's involved and included in. And architecturally, there's a set of routes, and, you know, that are navigated by individuals, that and the crossovers and the interchanges is where community really happens. And for us to map that out as an exercise with the community helped to formulate a brief, and it also helps to find out where the sparks are really occurring.
So you really do want to know what the community thinks. And that's essential, isn't it, for both the building committee and the architect, that it's not just coming with a package, presenting it to the community. You're actually going to find what the community thinks it needs.
It's always a difficult challenge to hit it on the head for everybody, but we absolutely, authentically, you know, are process-driven architects, and we don't know how it's going to look until we've engaged, and everybody's input impacts the final outcome. And it may take some adapting to for some people, and others may love it immediately, but we're striving to create the ultimate and best, long-lasting, future-proof, resilient concept that we can, that fully engages with, you know, and listens to the community.
Mm. And just to add to that as well, I said last night at the launch event that we don't just want, we need community involvement. We need everybody who was there and everyone who wasn't there, and in fact the wider community, to give their views and give their feedback, because the shul has to be a place that is welcoming and open to everybody, every Jew in our community. And you know, we'll come on to this, but we talked about accessibility. It's got to be inspirational to people who are coming in, and that's what we're aiming for.
And I think, Ashley, you said that the shul, it's the beating heart of the building. But how do you see that relating to both a prayer place and a community centre? Will it be both?
It's such an interesting question, and it came up a couple times, which I'm grateful for. The driver and the reason, the catalyst for the project is the shul. In the end of the day, it's a spiritual space, a space where Jews connect, you know, and where they pray and daven, and that is the foundation of the space. However, what is so exciting is that the shul is in essence a network of spaces. So I mentioned it being a heart, and it pumps blood through the veins of, through all these different, I suppose, organs or limbs that all form a part of, essential part of the body. It was really nice to reframe the building as, you know, not just a shul anymore. Maybe the name Whitefield Shul is something that's going to be discussed and looked at, and to start thinking, well, what is this and how does it impact my daily life, you know, from morning till eve? Where do I place myself in this, and how is it that I'm infused with, you know, a spiritual connection, a social connection, and a communal connection.
Which is brilliant. But going back to perhaps some more basic questions that were asked last night, questions about toilet facilities, about accessibility, about whether there would be a project manager, how we would pay for the project. Can you both perhaps deal with some of those a bit more mundane questions, but crucial ones?
Do you want me to go first? Well, now you're asking the difficult questions. Much of these questions, at this stage, we don't know the answer to. We are still in the early stages of the process, and we can't know how much it's going to cost until we've got the technical plans, the planning permission, we've got the contractors, we've got the quantity surveyors, all this sort of stuff. There's clearly a lot that goes into this. It's a chicken and egg scenario, because we can't go asking for money until we know what we're doing. But at the same time, nobody will give us any money until they see what we're doing. So we're having to work slightly in the dark at the moment. But once we have these initial designs through from Asher, the plan is to then go to a quantity surveyor. Quantity surveyor, and kind of get an idea of what the likely cost will be. And at that point, we can then go out and start doing some fundraising. But the other question that everyone asks me is, how are we going to pay for it? It's not a straightforward question. We know it's a challenge. We know that we're never going to be able to raise all the money that we need from the community. But there are other ways as well. So we are in the process of putting an application together for a government funding, which is it's called the Community Levelling Up Fund. and you can apply for up to £2 million for that. I don't know whether we will do that, but that's a mammoth application process, which we're currently working with Sarah Shipman on. Sarah writes grant applications and charitable funding applications. There are also numerous large Jewish charitable trusts who put money into these Jewish infrastructure projects. And we know this is the case because we've spoken to people who have done these building projects for shuls already, and they've given significant sums, up to potentially half the money required. So we're also looking to dedicate parts of the shul. And again, I said last night that if anybody is looking to potentially dedicate something, then please contact Alex Wolstein. Once we have the plans in place, and we present the plans, we're then going to do a formal launch of the community fundraising process. We'll be putting on events. We may do a match funding campaign. We don't know. All these things are up in the air, but we are confident that we can raise the money required. We know it's a challenge, but everybody loves a challenge.
Absolutely. And going back to Asher, you will, without doubt, upgrading the toilet facilities, accessibility, all these basic things.
I think we should leave them. I think that they're part of the history of the shul.
You're being recorded.
I think that historically we can find better things to leave behind. The truth is, it's actually an interesting question because we don't take anything for granted. And what can frustrate the wrong client is that we really interrogate things like the toilets, the bathrooms, change rooms, cloakrooms, and we try and we explore them, put it that way. We try and understand how they fit into the process. I think we made it quite clear. We're looking at how different people move through the building. And that was the exercise last night. How would a 3-year-old, a 5-year-old, a 15-year-old, a newlywed, how would the rabbi move through it? And once we understand those processes, then we can make the best possible decisions as to placement of ablutions, facilities, washing facilities, inside, outside, before shul, where do you put your talis? They seem simple. These are going to be the nuances that make this truly an exceptional and bespoke space.
We didn't actually mention the kitchens, which is extremely important to many people because lots of our activities now are food-based. So can you tell us a little bit about some ideas that you have around the kitchen facilities?
Yeah, that's quite cool. We're actually working on a project in New Jersey for an organization called Misameach. And there we came up with a concept around the kitchen, which is a heavily industrial kitchen that has to churn out catering for loads of families and kids. The concept is to put a central floating island in the middle, which holds about 20 people around it. And that's almost a residential style island that becomes a center for cooking lessons, challah bakes. It really becomes quite a special contained space that makes the kitchen, it was able to be an extension of the industrial kitchen, but it also facilitates the kitchen as a space for learning.
Which again is brilliant. So all these innovative ideas sound as though it's going to be a fascinating project.
Yeah, we're excited.
But Rob, whilst this refurbishment is taking place, how will shul services be maintained? Will there always be an area when the work starts, and Asher as well, that we can still, you know, come to shul?
That's definitely the plan. The plan, again, it all depends on the level of work required, but the plan is to... That I think the shul building lends itself quite nicely to being split down the middle from the foyer to the base. You've got the right hand side of the shul where the main shul is, and the youth centre that can be worked on. Whereas when you leave the left hand side, and so we've still got the hall to do all the shul, the normal shul services, and then switching back when that's done. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, so it's an interesting one. I've been giving it some thought, and it may be complicated, but what I do know is that it will be built into the design a methodology for how to continue, because there will not be a community left, you know, after construction if there's no contingency plan made. So that contingency will be an integrated kind of thought process in the design phase.
And Rob's already accused me of being a feminist this morning, so I'm going to ask the question. What ideas do you have so that women can sit in the shul, can feel more inclusive, whether this is on the same level or slightly, you know, varying levels, raised levels? And also, if you've taken into account the concept of the mechitza, would it be movable? Are these things that you're going to give good consideration to?
I always say our advantage in this space is that we're knowledgeable in the topics, the discussions and the arguments. And for us, that gives us an advantage because we're able to push the boundaries further. If we were guests in a space and not kind of born and bred in the space, we'd be perhaps more conservative in our approach. Having the background and understanding almost gives us the liberty to have the negotiations, the arguments, the kind of advocacy for women and for their space in the shul. For us, we explore materiality, laser cutting, 3D printing. We do all of those kinds of things that, you know, bring upon great forms of, you know, different types of perforation forms and screening. There are so many nice ways to navigate these complexities, and I think you know, through the process, we're going to arrive at really, really dynamic and I hope next level design solutions to these challenges.
Which sounds really, really exciting. So, unless you think we've missed any particular questions out, I just want to say thank you to you both. I know that you're very, very keen for the community to input. So we had lots of people come last night, but we're hoping that this podcast and future events we do will reach out to every single member of the community. And you want their ideas and input.
Of course.
And absolutely. I know that there is an email.
building@thewhc.co.uk. Okay. So if there's any questions, then just ask, or any ideas, and we'll feed them back to Asha. But yeah, we want everybody's involvement ultimately. And the idea, you know, Asha has a very basic idea from us of what's kind of needed, but he really has a blank canvas to go and do what he wants to do. And we want to make this shul the benchmark for other shuls in the country.
Absolutely.
And just as a kind of final point, progress and movement are such appealing things, and to watch and see that this community is progressing and pushing forward, and you know, that's unbelievable as a first step. You know, it's really a great show of, you know, dynamism and kind of willingness to take the future, you know, the uncertainty of the future, and, you know, grasp it. And that's very exciting, and we can't wait to like really get our hands into this and start to design something very special with a neshama.
Absolutely. Sounds brilliant. So thank you both very much indeed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Cool. Thank you.